Let's start off this morning by taking a walk back in time. We're going to go back almost 70 years. It was in November of 1947. A man by the name of Henry Morton Robinson had a piece published in the Reader's Digest. True story. And it opens with Henry looking out the window of his shop and a battered old pickup truck pulled in with baskets of apples in the back, and lady calls out, "Do you need any apples today?" And Henry didn't have the money for them. It was at the height of the Depression, and but he went out to talk to her. I'd written on the side of her old beat-up pickup was Effie's Apples. He ended up getting a bushel of one particular variety of apples and on credit, and she just said, "You pay me when you can." But she did a lot more than just extend credit to customers. She helped them in many, many ways. Sometimes she would show up and she'd have a jar of peaches, or she'd show up with a gallon of homemade maple syrup. One time during Christmas, she showed up and the back of her truck was all laden with boughs at a very holiday festive appearance. But when you remove the boughs, underneath was a cord of rock oak cut to firewood length that had just fit in his stove to keep his family warm through the winter. Henry was not the only one that benefited from Effie's generosity and her deep love for her fellow man. One time they received notice that a young mother just had a baby. Her family were moving to New York City. Her husband was to follow in a couple of days, and he'd been killed on the journey. And there she was, stranded in New York City with nothing. Effie didn't have a lot of income. She had a small investment that she'd made from when she had been an interior decorator in New York City. And from that, she had been getting about $200 a month, but that had shrunk to nothing with the market collapse in 29, and then selling a few apples. But she had been able to sell a bond, and she sold that bond, and she gave the entire proceeds to this young person. And what Effie got out of it was a lifelong exchange of letters and a deep appreciation for all that she'd done. And then when Henry's daughter became ill and the local doctor had no explanation and her condition deteriorated, suddenly another bond was sold. And there was enough money to get his daughter to the specialists in New York City. But Effie didn't just give things away. She always made the recipient feel good about it. Henry remembered that once she came to him with a story about how her father's autobiography needed editing, and she hired him to edit her dad's autobiography. Another bond was sold. But after the war, the economy started to pick up. Things started to go. Henry's business started to improve, and he got a little bit ahead. And one day he went up to Effie, and he pressed a check into her hand, and he said, "Effie, here is the financial portion of what it is that I owe you for all that you've given me for all the years. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to pay back all of the love." And Effie said, "No, no, no." She said, "Don't give it to me all at once. Give it to me a little bit at a time, like I gave it to you." But he was never able to finish that payment, for she passed away just a few weeks later. So Henry had the rest of the money that he had that he was going to pay back Effie with. And as time went on, he found that he was helping out other people, not giving them a hand out, but giving them a hand up. And he continued to give to other people. The story closes with a particularly powerful quotation, and I want to read this to you. He said, "The oddest part of the whole affair is this. People whom I help often help others later on. By now, the few dollars that Euphemia gave me have been multiplied 100-fold, so the account can never be marked closed, for Effie's love will go on compounding interest in hearts that have never known her." Today we're going to talk about stepping into that place of that type of love. The title of my talk is "Don't Bring Me Down." And the points that I'm going to make today are, number one, we are it. Number two, our life is our beliefs. And number three is, as we align with truth, we reveal truth. Number one, we are it. Ernest Holmes says in a textbook, Science of Mind, "There is that within every individual which partakes of the nature of the universal wholeness and, insofar as it operates, is God." There is that within every individual which partakes of the nature of the universal wholeness and is God. God is within each and every one of us. There is only one life, and that life is divine. Now you may say, what do you mean there's only one life? I've got a life. You've got a life. Each one of us have a life. Yes, we each have a life. But there's only one thing, life. There's only one life. And I submit that that one life is the thing that's common to all of us, and that life is what is God. One life. We each have a life, but there is only one big life. It's the analogy that we use in our teachings in some of our classes is a drop in the ocean. Each one of us is like a drop in that magnificent ocean. Within that drop is all the properties of the ocean, all the saline, all of the other properties of the ocean. But we are not the entire ocean. We're just a drop. But we have all of the qualities of that. And that ocean is prosperous and it is abundant. And that life is the life of God, and that life is perfect. In Creative Mind, Ernest Holmes says, "All that we have believed in which contradicts the perfect whole must be dropped from our thought, and we must come to realize that we are now living in a perfect universe, peopled with perfect spiritual beings, each of which, coupled with the great divinity, is complete within himself." It doesn't mean that we don't have challenges. It doesn't mean that we don't have effects in our life, that we don't have struggle and strife. We don't have all the things that every one of us has in our lives. But what it means is that life is perfect, and that life is always there. It is always who we are. It is complete within himself. Each of our lives have all of the qualities of the divine life, including prosperity. But we forget. I think all of us forget. We forget things, a lot of different things. Comes to mind the story of Bubba. Bubba lived way out in the country. And one day this old mangy stray dog showed up at Bubba's place out there, and he didn't want a dog around. And so his wife says, "Bubba, why don't you put that dog in the truck and take it out and let it loose in the woods? That's where it came from. That's where it really wants to be." So Bubba thought that'd be okay. So he loads up the dog in his truck, and he drove out a couple of miles, and he chased the dog out. And he turned around and he headed back. Just about the time he pulled into the driveway, here comes the dog. Dog almost beat him back. And she says, "Bubba, I thought you were going to take the dog." He said, "It did, but it almost beat me back." She said, "Well, you got to take it out further. You got to take it way out there. Go around in a couple circles or something. Get it confused." But he doesn't know where it is. So Bubba loaded up the dog and off he went. And he went and he drove and he drove. He drove for about an hour and he went around a couple. He went on roads he'd never seen in that county before. He drove all around. Finally, he knew he was way out. So he got that dog and he put the dog out. And about an hour later, Mama gets a phone call. It's old Bubba and he says, Bubba, is that dog back yet? She says, well, yes, it is. Come down the driveway now. And he says, well, would you go ahead and put him on? I need directions back. See, we forget. We forget sometimes. Number two, our life is our beliefs. And the law works through us and brings forward the demonstration of our life. We are a walking demonstration of our inner beliefs. And we've covered this the last few weeks, how our beliefs are manifest in our lives. If we want to see what we are thinking, just look at our lives, because our lives are the outpicturing of our beliefs. There used to be a cartoon character when I was little. No longer published, but one character, Joe Blefusnik, and he walked around, he always had a dark cloud over him. Everywhere Joe went, it was raining. And some people are like that. They embrace the negative in every single thing that they do. There's a thing, I don't know if we can say it. You know, what is it? Life's bad and then you die. You know, and there are people that go along with that belief. And so what do they experience? A bad life and then they die. I was really touched by the sacred reading this morning. It really hit it on. Butterworth. We give other people and things the power to control our lives, but even more importantly, our thoughts. We listen to TV news about the decline in the economy, we panic or we get angry. Having a grateful heart and staying in the consciousness of thankfulness can shield you from it all. But it is those thoughts, that negative thought pattern, that establishes that. I want to go back to Effie, because you see, Effie never had that. Effie had an unshakable belief in the goodness of all men. And Effie was willing to stand in the middle of that. She was willing to be that distributor of the good that she had. She was able to give from a well that could never run dry, a well of love, a love from her heart. That final quote. The oddest part of the whole affair is this. People whom I help often help others later on. By now, the few dollars Euphemia gave me have been multiplied 100-fold, so the account can never be marked closed. For Effie's love will go on compounding interest in hearts that have never known her. And as I read this morning, it occurred to me, I think it's time for our center to step into a place where we can all do that. And I think that it's time for us to initiate a legacy program, a program where we can put in our wills and other documents that when we go on, we can continue to give. And it's my commitment to you that by the end of this year, we are going to have a legacy program so that everybody can step in and everybody can be an Effie in their own way, in their own world. During the Great Depression, there was a group consciousness that there was not enough. And sure enough, there was not enough. That's why there wasn't money, why Henry didn't have enough money to be able to pay for the apples. Ernest Holmes in A New Design for Living said, at all times, we are freely creating the life that we live. The ability consciously and specifically to better our lives depends on the degree to which we are able to believe in our basic concepts of the nature of life with faith. I think that's one of the most powerful things Holmes ever wrote. At all times, we are freely creating the life that we live. Our lives are exactly what we believe. The ability, consciously and specifically, to better our lives depends on the degree to which we are able to believe in our basic concepts of the nature of life with faith. If we have a belief in the basic nature of life, that we live in an abundant universe, that we can step forth and we can be part of that abundance, then that will be the outpicturing of our lives. And if we can do that with the quiet assurance of faith, it is bound to follow. My third point is, as we align with truth, we reveal truth. There is something within us that knows truth. I remember when I first came to this center, very first meeting I ever had with Reverend Nancy. I had never even attended a Sunday service, but I had asked a question, and she came, and I remember she patted my arm and she said, "Well, Don, let me tell you a little bit about what we believe." And in the next 15, 20 minutes, she began to speak, and I never heard so much truth in such a compact little time in my life. There is something within us that knows a truth with a capital T, something that's greater than the things that we learn. There's a great example of this in classical philosophy. Socrates, this is all laid out by Plato, but as Socrates was in dialogue with Meno, who was a general, and they were talking about virtue and, you know, whether virtue has to be learned or whether virtue is something that's inherent within us. And Socrates' position was that everything is inherent within us. All knowledge, everything is already within us. It's just a matter of discovering it. Meno argued the other side. He said, no, we have to be taught. We aren't born knowing anything. About that time, a servant boy came up to Meno. He had a message or something. And Socrates said, well, just a moment. Let me show you. And he said, does this young servant boy know anything about geometry? And I said, well, no, of course not. Well, does he know anything about mathematics? No, he's never been taught any of that. Well, okay, let's just look at this. And he drew a square. And he says to the boy, okay, can you draw a square that's exactly twice the size of that? And the boy didn't know for sure, but so he thought, well, he extended it twice as long that way and twice as long that way and then connected them. Well, of course, that was four times as big, not twice. Oh. So he said, try again, try something else. So he shortened the sides a little bit and he made it three times larger. But he would have had an infinite number of times shrinking it down to get to where it was. And then Socrates took this young boy and never did anything but ask him questions. And he asked him a series of questions, which the boy could easily answer. Any of you could easily answer. And Socrates was able to show him how to construct a square that was exactly double the size of the original square. Never once did he teach him any geometry. Never did he teach him any arithmetic or math. It was all by asking questions. And Socrates' point was that that knowledge was already within that servant boy. And I submit that Socrates has a point. There are a lot of things, they come to us in aha moments where we just know that it's the truth. There is an inherent knowledge. So my conclusion today, what I want everybody to take away today, the take-home point, is that this week, listen to your inner wisdom. See where your thoughts are out of alignment with the truth that you know is within you, that you are part of the one life. And then I ask you to make a conscious choice to leave the mistaken ideas behind and to embrace that truth, that absolute truth. And so it is with the awareness of that infinite truth that lies within each of us. And I ask my colleagues, practitioners, to join me in holding the congregation in love and light, and simply knowing that within each and every one of us there is but one life, and that life is the life of God, and that life is perfect. That life is my life, and that is the life of each and every one of us. And so I know that as we live and move and have our being on this earthly plane, we indeed face challenges. And in everything that we do, we are given opportunities to reframe and relook and re-know how we look at our lives. I speak my word for those who are experiencing lack and limitation, money challenges, more month than there is paycheck. We simply know the truth is that we live in an abundant universe. And we step aside, we turn our back on the condition of not enough, and we embrace the condition that we have all that we need. For those who are experiencing health challenges, we simply know that in spite of the fact that there may be dis-ease, there may be the appearance of things that are not right physically or mentally, that the truth is that we are all beings of God, that we are all blessed, that we are all perfect in every way. And I specifically speak my word now for anyone who is experiencing heart issues, issues of the heart. Whether it be the regular beating of the heart, whether it be valves, any condition with the heart, I absolutely know that within each of us is that perfect regulator, that drumbeat that allows that heart to beat in perfect divine right order, perfect synchronicity to allow the blood to circulate throughout the body. For each and every person that is experiencing that heart issue, I know that truth. And finally, I speak my word for anyone who is experiencing any kind of a challenge of relationships, knowing that as we interact with other human beings on this plane, that we are always beings of love, and that that love, the very love of God, prevails in any situation, whether it be family situation, work situations, discord of any type is set aside because we are beings of love. We are that expression of God. We are that expression of love. We let anything other than that fall away. And so now I just give thanks. I give thanks for my awareness of the power and the presence of God expressing through and as each and every one of us. I give thanks. I release these words to a working of law which always responds. I let it go. I let it be. And so it is.